If you play sports games in 2014, you need Operation Sports. Whether you're knee-deep in an online league, building your offline player career, living the ultimate team life, or simply enjoying one-off games against your friends, Operation Sports will help you get everything possible out of your favorite sports game. The legendary forums at Operation Sports go deep on every topic imaginable, for not just the latest games on the newest platforms, but also some of your favorite ones from years past. You name it, they've got it. Gameplay tips, roster analysis, sliders, critical analysis, wish lists, and terrific places to meet other like-minded sports gamers to form game-specific leagues and communities. Madden, NBA 2K, UFC, MLB The Show, NHL, NCAA, NBA Live, WWE, Forza, Gran Turismo, and more. Of course, that's not all. Operation Sports keeps you up to date with the latest news from around the sports gaming world, along with in-depth reviews, previews, press releases, and opinions. Each community member can also create their own arena where you, too, can blog about anything sports or sports game related to your heart's content. Operation Sports also produces great audio content, including the Dual Threat podcast, as well as the Press Row podcast, the definitive sports game show. 2014 is going to be another groundbreaking year for sports game. Be sure to make Operation Sports the center of it all. Operation Sports, dedicated to sports game.
Hello, this is the Press Row Podcast with my daddy.
Welcome to the Press Row Podcast, brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Well, all right, we are back after what feels like forever. It's really only about a month, but we do have most of the band back together. Welcome, everybody. This is the Press Row Podcast for your Friday, May 2nd, 2014. Yes, May. So much is going on, believe it or not, including we're just a few days away from the PS4 release of MLB The Show. Much more on that, of course, in a little bit. But first, we have a jam-packed panel today. So let's get right to it. Moving from left to right on your radio, up first, a woman who still cannot wrap her head around Fargo, the TV show, but mostly because it's not based in Minneapolis. From U.S. Gamer and many other publications, Kat Bailey. Kat, welcome to the show.
I just don't understand Martin Freeman with a Minnesotan accent. It doesn't compute. But I heard that it's actually a pretty good show, which is surprising. But Fargo is one of my favorite movies ever, so I may have to actually sit down and watch it. In the meantime, I'm watching hockey. So much hockey.
There is a lot of hockey going on. Up next, we have a man who is, well, let's just face it, he is not exactly tonight the world's biggest Memphis Grizzlies fan, but he is the executive editor of Operation Sports from Operation Sports, Mr. Chris. What? Chris Sanner is back on the show? I don't believe it. Ladies and gentlemen, Chris Sanner, welcome back to the show.
Hey, everybody. My name is Chris. I work in sports video games. I cover them, write about them, you know, review them, you know, that sort of thing. That's my thing. No, how's everybody doing? No, seriously. No, Rich, I will tell you this. I did make a bold prediction in a room full of people who will vouch for this back in 2011. I said the Thunder will not win a championship so long as Scott Brooks is their coach, because the guy literally makes the most fundamental basketball coaching mistakes in the world, including running out of timeouts with minutes left in the game consistently in a close game.
Especially considering you get like 49 timeouts per half in the NBA, that's particularly bad.
The other thing that's really wrong with this picture is that literally I can tell you the exact inbounds play they're going to run when the game is on the line in game six against Memphis. It's going to be Kevin Durant's going to come off of a particularly bad screen. He's going to catch the pass and throw up about a 30-foot fadeaway 3-point shot. Whether it goes in or not is basically on luck. That's Scott Brooks right there. So I'm just saying that's what's going to happen.
All right. You know,
I'm not bitter.
not bitter at all. Up next is a guy who was once struck out by a pitcher for the Philadelphia Athletics. From Polygon, Mr. Owen Good. Owen, welcome to the show.
Yeah, thank you for reminding me of that, Rich. That memory is actually old enough to drink. It took place 21 years ago in Fayetteville, North Carolina. I was interning for the newspaper there, and Fayetteville had the Generals, a double-A team in the South Atlantic League. The newspaper was sponsoring an old-timers game, and the team of old-timers that they rounded up had actually played in the major leagues, but the only team that they had to play against them were people from the newspaper itself. So a bunch of guys, you know, me and a couple of guys from graphics and somebody from sports. Anyway, we went out to the hitting cage and we went to the fast speed cage. We went to the 90 mile an hour cage. And I still actually had some of my talent such that it existed. And I was killing it. And I'm thinking, I'm going to double off of somebody's grandfather here. I'm going to take it on. I'm going to take some guy deep even. And I got up there and I was struck out the way I always was in high school, which was fastball, curveball. It only dawned on me until later that I was struck out by someone who pitched for Connie Mack.
You know, when I saw Philadelphia Athletics, I really thought, I was like, there's no way, right? Because when did Philadelphia move to Oakland? In like the 40s? 50s?
They moved to Kansas City in 1953.
Oh, right. Kansas City before Oakland. That's right. Well, there you go. Up next, we have a man who is only 3 weeks away from starting his camp out to get tickets to the new Star Wars movie. From Polygon, Mr. Sumit Sarkar. Sumit, welcome to the show.
I mean, I like Star Wars. I'm not like a huge into the extended universe, which apparently is not canon anymore or anything like that. But no, I'm excited, don't get me wrong. But I feel like most people my age are excited. And if they weren't, then the casting announcement this week got them excited again. Honestly, I'm much more excited about the New York Rangers, who just defeated the Philadelphia Flyers and are moving on to the second round to face the Pittsburgh Penguins. So go Rangers.
There you go. Up next, a man grappling with how the number 84 can mean such different things in Ultimate Team modes. From that sports gamer, Mr. TJ Lauerman. TJ, welcome to the show.
Hey, Rich. Thanks for having me back. I would like to be the bigger man because I believe the last couple episodes we have really been ragging on your Mets team. And they're doing pretty good this year, Rich.
Darn right.
They got Absolutely. This new young kid. I don't know if you saw him playing right field, Bobby Abreu.
Yeah, just
he's
just
got some big days ahead of him, I believe.
Fresh faced.
Yeah, they're like 15-11. They're second place. I mean, to my Braves, but they're still doing very good. I'm actually really surprised. I thought they were going to be like 5-20 by now, but congratulations, Rich.
Well, thank you. You know, there's nothing like rooting for a team that's good in April because you're guaranteed that they'll be there in October. Well, actually, maybe not, but that's all right. Hey, everybody. Yes, and I am Rich Grisham, and yes, I am starting to believe that this may, in fact, be the Mets year. Well, all right, so we are going to start with MLB The Show. A lot of us have been playing it since it came out on either the PS3 and or the Vita, so I want to know what's going on in your MLB The Show experience, and we're going to start with you, TJ Lauerman. Tell us what's happening with you.
Rich, there's an epidemic in Major League Baseball today. I don't know if you know, but I think there's already 16 pitchers this season that have gone down with Tommy John surgery.
Oh, wait, nope, it's 17. Somebody just went down right now.
If you said that, I would literally Google it right now because I would believe you because it's happening at such a frequent pace. I am now terrified that it's going to happen to my pitcher. I have been working my way up. I am now in the bullpen of the Angels in 2016. And in four games, I've pitched 10 innings. Which is ridiculous because in the last two seasons, I don't think I've pitched more than an inning in a game. So now I'm pitching 3 and 4 innings every outing I have. I'm pretty sure my guy's arm is just going to fall off very shortly. But I was able to rack up 41 saves in AAA, so I was nice. Pretty impressed by that. But now I'm sitting behind whoever the Angels just ousted as their closer, just waiting for my spot.
So hopefully, you're... So have you had a cup of coffee yet in the majors, or you're still in AAA?
Yes, I broke camp in 2016 with the Angels.
Nice.
And I've gotten into a couple games with them, so.
Okay.
I'm not going back down to minor leagues.
So you are into 2016, so you have played through two full seasons.
Right, as a closing pitcher.
Right.
So I've only played about, I think I just looked, it was like 80 or 100 games, but about that many innings, so.
So you played a lot of Road to the Show the last few years. Anything in particular from your experience stand out that's improved, better, or different this year?
Well, I finally found out today, because of this call, how to add an extra pitch to my pitcher's repertoire. I never actually thought they would hide something in the help menu, and apparently it was there. So if you're playing it and you don't know, if you go to training, where the pitches are, like where the attributes for the pitches are. If you hit triangle, you can add a pitch there. Thank you, Owen Good, for the heads up on that.
No problem.
All right. So, Chris Sanner, you have been boycotting the Press Row podcast for political purposes, but we are glad that you have finally given that up. So we haven't spoken to you for a while. How has your experience with MLB The Show been?
Well, first off, Rich, I need to explain the reasons for my I got nothing. You caught me off guard there. I don't know, but I have actually only played a couple of. I've only really kind of gone through the rookie training camp and played a few games in Double A, honestly, so far with the Vita version. I've been playing a lot of. I've been playing a lot of exhibitions and stuff. I don't even know why I haven't even committed to a mode yet. I really think I might be trying franchise mode this year again. I don't know. But in my road to the show, I decided for the first time in a long time I'm a first baseman. And I'm not doing so well, Rich. I'm not hitting well. I'm not fielding well. I think I've focused on the wrong attributes, honestly. And I'm my guy is does not hit for average. He's really fast. I don't know why I focused on speed of all attributes, but I've got the fastest first baseman in the minor leagues. He just can't see the ball to hit it. So, but it's been interesting. I liked how the road to the show was set up this year, actually, the beginning and such. So that's an improvement. I'm still trying to decide if I'm going to continue it this year or if I'm going to do a franchise mode when the PlayStation 4 mode or PlayStation 4 version drops. That's going to be, I guess, with the ability to sim through games and jump in at any time, I'm really thinking about doing franchise mode because I think I can probably get in a whole season doing that, maybe.
I'm curious what you think about the controls with the Vita, particularly for hitting. Do you have any issues with them? What do you think?
I honestly cannot do the analogs at all with the Vita, so I just focus on button mashing. I just do timing. I mean, that's just the only way I can hit on the Vita, mainly because I have this weird problem about like jerking when I go to hit. I'm literally trying to swing the bat. Luckily enough, the Vita has not flown through the house yet, but I literally jerk and so I'll mistime the hit or something. I think I've got a serious problem. I don't know what's going on. I would just barely jerk and it's just like I lose sight of the ball anyways. I don't know what's going on.
Oh, and good. Describe to me your current experience happening in MLB The Show.
Well, I'm not jerking as much as Chris. However,
I will say, Owen, there are medical studies out there that I'm done.
Yeah. You got to do it to keep them going crazy, I guess. But my pitcher is he's in his second season with the Kansas City Royals, and he is the he's number two in the rotation behind James Shields. His first season, he went, I think it was 10-0, actually, was undefeated. Had several no decisions, but made 12 starts at the end of the year. The Royals won the World Series, but I was not. It was interesting. I was scheduled to pitch the fifth game of the division series because the Royals won their division, and my guy won a key game in the final series against Detroit to salt away the title. He was scheduled to pitch in the fifth game of the division series against Boston and did not. And then didn't pitch in any of the other games. I would sim to next and it just went through the entire postseason. I am curious though. So what I did with my player was, and you can do this year, it's different from last year, is you can, you know, you enter the draft as a high schooler. And if you don't like, you know, your draft position, or for whatever reason, you may opt to go to college, which is just a background simulation, which you can say, I'm going to sit out 1 through 4 years, and you will be rewarded with training points, 200 or 150 for each year, up to a maximum of 600. I don't know why anybody wouldn't just sit out 4 years. It's not like you're going to get injured in college. So I went that route and was very well accelerated. You know, I pitched the AAA All-Star game, and made the majors in August of my first professional season. So I was definitely fast tracked, and I did none of this with, you know, buying the training points. This was all you know, through the creation menu. But as I was playing with dynamic difficulty and I got to Hall of Fame difficulty with like 3+ marks or 4+ marks by the end of the year. And in my second season, I don't know if anybody else has noticed this, it got extremely difficult. Hmm. Like I gave up no home runs, maybe one in my first professional season, and that includes the Major League Tour. And I was playing, I mean, I was striking out Miguel Cabrera, but in spring training, in my first start against Cat, the Minnesota Twins, you know, I'm getting taken out of target field, you know, with regularity. So I don't know if it's such a palpable difficulty spike. And I haven't played Road to the Show in about a week because I'm on to other things, and I'm going to revisit it once the PS4 version arrives. But it was such a palpable difficulty spike. I'm kind of wondering if that is deliberate, and if the game might be softer on you despite dynamic difficulty in your first pro season, and then you are really expected to bring it in your second.
TJ, have you noticed any of that?
I have not. Since I'm just playing on the Vita, I have just stuck it on veteran difficulty. So I think anything after that, it's just going to be too hard with those little thumbsticks to try to pitch any better than that.
Interesting. I have completely forsaken Road to the Show, as we talked a little bit about. For whatever reason, This is about, I think, the sixth year in a row that I've been playing Road to the Show, and the player lock has completely ruined me for anything else. Like, I started a season with the Mets a couple of weeks ago, and I now have found that it works beautifully for me. This is what I do. Every game, I start off as a player lock as David Wright, and I play the first 6 to 7 innings as David Wright without fielding being on, because fielding on the Vita in particular is just agony. But I just take David Wright's at-bats for the first 6 or 7 innings, which is usually obviously about 2 or 3 at-bats. And then around the 7th inning, I take the player lock off, and I play the rest of the game. And if you play the show, you know that it is incredibly well done. The chess match of what pitchers to bring in, and you know how to match a lefty versus a righty, and a righty versus a lefty, and you know, all of the subtle nuances of baseball are particularly heightened in the the 7th, 8th, and 9th inning, and that's just what I do. And I took a couple of flights last week, and I played about 2 weeks worth of games, one on the way in, and another week on the way out. And I'm delighted by that. And it's ruined me, as I said, for every other mode. And, man, I just love how player lock has completely changed the way that I can play the show. And I just love it. And Road to the Show for me right now is just not happening. For whatever reason, my mind is kind of shut that off. I don't really enjoy it. But the player lock lets me rock through it. So that's how I've been doing it. Now, Sumit Sarkar, you have not been playing much of the current version of Road to the Show because you are pretty much aiming for the PS4. So what do you think that you're going to jump into on the PS4? Are you going straight Road to the Show, or like, what are your plans when the PS4 version hits next week?
Well, yeah, I am waiting for the PS4 version of the show. I'm just going to resume my Road to the Show. I didn't get all that far into it on the PS3. I think I was in to like second or third month of my first season in AA. Yeah, probably the second month, actually. You know, doing really well career there, so I'll just continue that on PS4.
Cat Bailey, you've been on a 3-week sojourn across the country, New York, Boston, Minneapolis, probably stopped by Fargo. What are your plans with MLB The Show when it hits on the PS4 this week?
It will come out and I will play it pretty much. I have a Road to the Show character saved that I'm actually pretty happy with. I cannot remember what they're... Oh, Catfish Hunter, I think it is. And I'm still in like AA, so I plan to pick up my character and keep playing. One of the problems with a game like this, you know, is that you put it down for a little bit and it can be tough to pick it up again.
Yes.
And, you know, one of the things was that I was in a rhythm. I had made it a habit to play this game. And when I came back, my gaming mindset was in a completely different place. I had been playing Vita and everything. And so as a result, I haven't really picked up NHL or MLB since getting home. I've been mostly playing a bit of Madden and otherwise focusing on Vita.
So, Chris Sanner, the PS4 version hits on Tuesday. Operation Sports is, you know, the Operation Sports community is obviously, you know, there's a whole lot of conversations going on about it. Some gameplay videos have recently come out. What is your personal level of excitement, and what is the Operation Sports community level of excitement for MLB The Show on the PS4 finally coming out the first Tuesday in May?
You know, Rich, honestly, I think this might be the most rational just OSers and hardcore sports gamers have been about a sports game in a really long time. And I say that because we did a hands-on preview, what, 2-3 weeks ago, something like that. And Kaylee, a guy who wrote it, came back and he just talked about how the game was very similar. You're going to get, you know, very similar experience. It's just going to look a lot better. You know, there's a few small enhancements, but it's a similar experience. And I think that really tempered expectations. And I think people are really looking forward to the game. I personally have been expecting, you know, a pretty good looking version of baseball, but I'm not expecting the guys at Sony to completely tear down the wall and make this thing just, you know, bonkers, amazing. Yeah, I think that honestly, this game is going to be really well received. It's going to be the type of game that people can see the potential in the future, but it's just, I really don't think people are really not, if they're expecting more than, you know, a souped up version of the current gen game, they're going to be disappointed. But that we've been saying this about every next gen game up to this point. So, and I really, I think You're just going to get a really good game. It's going to be solid. It's going to look incredibly pretty. And I think OS, for the most part, actually is on that same page.
Cat Bailey?
Yeah, I actually did. I went down to Sony a few weeks ago and I checked it out. And my main takeaway was pretty much in line with Operation Sports, which is that it is prettier for sure. Though it says something that they had to give me a guided tour of the differences because the eye test, I guess it looks a bit prettier, but I don't think it's a gigantic upgrade at all. I would say that FIFA and Madden both had much more noticeable differences. Sony can dispute that if they want. But as a result, I was like, you know, if it were just me spending money, I think I would have been content just playing on PS3 this year and waiting until the PS4 version came out. And the next version of the PS4 came out. The impression that I get from having talked to the developers and played some of the game is that they were just really, really under the gun to get this version out the door, make sure that they planted their flag in this generation, and then they could go and do real changes next year. That they just wanted to have a better looking version that was feature complete, done. Which, I mean, fine, especially if you chose to hold out and wait, you're going to get a perfectly fine product. But as someone who's already spent some time with the PlayStation 3 version, I think the differences are actually pretty marginal.
You know, it's interesting because we were very dubious on the launch of the sports games at, you know, when the PS4 and the Xbox One came out. And in Madden in particular, we were incredibly, like, I mean, when TJ and I went to see it in New York City a couple weeks before it hit, you know, we were like, wow, that literally looks like the Xbox 360 version of the game. But what turned out was that, to me, EA really undersold, if that's possible, the increased... they undersold how much better Madden on the next-gen versions of the game was. I think a lot of people who play a lot of the next-gen version of Madden would agree that it just the underlying gameplay, the unsexy stuff, the non-back-of-the-box stuff is significantly better. And I think you would say that FIFA... especially when you go back from next-gen FIFA to, like, the FIFA World Cup, you really notice the in a lot of ways, just subtle improvements to the game. I'm wondering if the MLB The Show game will have that same sort of thing where it's almost going to be a slow burn, where some of the really under the hood things might actually be stronger, but it takes a while to notice them. And to your point, Kat, the visual leap isn't nearly as big. That's just kind of what I'm thinking about.
Well, oh, Rich, good. I think that the main reason to get it is actually the stuff that's inherent to the PS4. So, for example, being able to broadcast, right? Being able to easily save a highlight reel and share it with your friends, or share photos, which is not as easy to do on the PS3. Those are all good reasons to play MLB The Show on the PS4. It's just we're a little ways off from having it actually be into the game.
Owen Good, your thoughts?
Yeah, I don't think there are enough complex interactions in baseball as a sport to showcase the additional computing power and how that benefits the game the way that FIFA and Madden were obviously better in different games with more horsepower underneath the hood. I mean, we saw how much better Madden became, how much more sensible the running game was. And maybe that was because they just refined the overall engine after the criticisms were leveled against the Xbox 360 and PlayStation 3 version. Could be. But baseball, it's pitcher versus hitter. It's a single guy out there in the outfield catching the ball. It's a third baseman making a diving stab and throwing it down to first. The actual plays that involve really complicated relationships are few and far between.
Good point.
And so, but here's the thing. You can't say that we're not going – we are seeing a better game this year in MLB The Show. The game is what we've already received, because the PlayStation 3 version and its features will be complete in the PlayStation 4 version is, as I've said, it makes previous versions seem thin by comparison. Once you play the most current, once you play 14, you go, I don't want to play 13. Obviously, with things like player lock and all the other upgrades that they've made. And certainly with the way your career begins in Road to the Show, which we talked about earlier. So, The Show, it's not like The Show mailed it in. And it's not like The Show has nothing to show for itself. It's just that they took all of their risks with the main product, admirably so, and put it out there now. And what you'll see on PlayStation 4 is a better-looking version of that. And I don't think that's a demerit necessarily.
Right.
You're talking about, these guys, this is a boutique operation. They do not have a lot of manpower. And Sony, is very proud of what they do. But they can't throw the kind of money at this that 2K Sports can, for example. And so, they were really, as Kat mentioned, under the gun to make sure that what rolled out for PlayStation 4 was exactly what people, There wasn't some skimping one way or the other, as we all remember with the last console transition. And so, they've done their job, but the idea that we're going to see a game that plays differently, even if it does, even if there's extra computing power in there, I can't conceive of the interactions where that's going to be really on display.
Interesting.
I will say that I think that there's a potential for the online to be quite a bit better on the PS4, just due to the added horsepower, because one thing we were talking about, or I was talking about with the developers, I was like, so the online, have you, I know this is crazy, I told them, but have you considered looking into the kind of the technology that the fighting game community uses, because they are so focused on exact frame counts as well? And we said, well, there's a lot more going on in our game, right? I mean, when you throw a ball, we're doing so many physics calculations with how it's moving and how the bat contacts the ball and everything. And that takes up bandwidth. So I wonder if with better horsepower and that sort of thing, if we're not going to see a better experience on the PS4 when it comes to online play. They say that it's going to be much better. And in fact, that the PS3 version is going to be better soon too. So hopefully.
You know, I mean, We're definitely not going to get to a long discussion about MLB The Show online because we'll just, you know, bash it for a while. But I will say that I do have hope for it because of what has been by far the most smooth online experience I've had. I mean, while there have been instances of drops and you know, poor connections, the amount of uptime, you know, with our online sports games on the PS4, you know, the quality of the online experience with the PS4 sports games, from my experience, has been significantly better than any of the games in the previous generation. And to me, it's not even close. All right, so before we move on to the next topic, go around the table real quick. Level of excitement for PS4 MLB The Show from a 1 to 10. TJ Lowerman.
Well, since I skipped the PS3, I'll put it at a 13. So I'm super excited to finally play this on a console.
That is not allowed. But TJ Lowerman, who's taking the whole day off, is going to be streaming, doing all sorts of crazy stuff on That Sports Gamer the day that it launches. I'm going to be watching some of that while I'm stuck at the office. I hate you, TJ.
Up next, just don't tell my boss.
So, Mitzar Carr, your level of excitement for the PS4 MLB The Show from 1 to 10.
I'm going to put it about, like, you know, an 8. Certainly, as we've discussed, it's going to be like a pretty much the same game, but looking better. Obviously, the sharing stuff it will be neat, but no, I mean, I did stop playing it on PS3 because I kind of wanted to, you know, really save a lot of my energy for the PS4 version.
Chris Sander, your level of excitement, 1 to 10.
I'm going to go with an 8.05 just to be a little bit more excited than Submit. Just a little bit more excited.
This is not The Price is Right, sir. Cat Bailey, your level of excitement.
Probably 5 out of 10 because MLB The Show is not my primary sports game. And I feel like I've already had a fair amount of MLB this year. That said, the Twins, it's almost May and the Twins are over 500 and only a game out of first place in the Central. So that is actually kind of keeping my interest in baseball up a little bit. So whenever it shows up, I may put some serious time into it.
Owen, good. Your level of excitement from 1 to 10.
I'm a little more on Cat's spectrum of things, but because it is my primary sports game, I'm going to give it a 6. I feel like I've seen, you know, what the gameplay features. I've seen all of those. And if it looks better, you know, that's great. Madden obviously looked better too, but I think we're still going to see basically a fresh coat of paint on the same interactions and animations, and that's fine. But it's not something that's really getting me out of bed in the morning.
You know, I'm definitely, my level is around a 7. And see, here's my problem. My problem is that I can't stop playing NBA 2K14. It's my career mode. I am so hooked on that thing. It's ridiculous. It is like the perfect mode for me and with what I like to do. Like, for me to play MLB The Show, I need to be sitting down in front of my television. And while I know that when it first comes out, I'm going to be doing that, over the course of a few months, like, you can't get hop on the treadmill and walk 3 miles and play MLB The Show. You won't be able to hit. You won't be able to pitch with the precision. But yeah, I can mess around and get a triple double in NBA 2K14. No problem doing that. So I'm definitely excited. I'm hoping that I can somehow work it into my regimen, which includes our Press Row Madden Football League a couple of days a week, and then my obsession of NBA 2K14. So I'm definitely excited, looking forward to it, and like I said, hoping it can somehow make its way into my rotation. And definitely the player lock, you know, that whole play the first 6-7 innings and the player lock, and then play the final 2 or 3 as a full team, definitely gives me hope that I can make that happen. So well, all right, we're going to take a quick break from the main segment of the show to meet the winner of the Press Row Podcast March Madness Tournament, Andrew Hockeyluck. Andrew, congratulations and welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me. Excited to be on.
So, first off, where are you from?
I am actually from a town just outside of Toronto called Mississauga.
Oh, sure, I've been there. I love that part of Canada. Really cool place.
Yeah, it's great. Cold, definitely cold.
Well, yeah, definitely cold for sure. And right before I called you, you mentioned you had to move away from the baby's room. So it sounds like you've got at least one youngster.
Yeah, just one. He just turned one. So.
Oh, boy. Wow. Well, congratulations. That's great. How has having a child affected your gaming life, I got to ask?
It has recently absolutely crushed it. Also working from home and being a stay-at-home dad. So.
Wow.
There's not much time for gaming left in there.
So what do you do?
I am actually a programmer of video games.
Oh, really? Anything you can talk about?
Yeah, I sure can. We are coming out with a game called Citizens of Earth. It's an RPG. It is published by Atlas.
Nice.
And it is scheduled currently to come out September-ish of this year.
Wow. Oh, so you're in crunch mode, sounds like.
Yeah, sort of. We're bringing it out on PC, PS4, Vita, 3DS, and Wii U.
Excellent. Wow. I have several of those. If you listen to the show, you know I'm a huge fan of Vita in particular. So what's the name of the game again?
Called Citizens of Earth.
Citizens of Earth. It's coming on the Vita. I will definitely get that, no doubt. You talked a little bit about it, but like, you know, what exactly kind of a game is it? Like, how do you get into it? It's like free to play, or like, what's the overall model?
It's going to be a one-time purchase, downloadable game. Probably, I don't think the price has been nailed down, but probably not full retail price. Essentially, the big pitch is you play as the vice president of the world, and you walk around town, figure out what's going on in the world, and you recruit the citizens of the earth to come join in your cause and try to fight the bad guys. So we're trying to merge sort of the earthbound feel with elements of Suikoden, where you can recruit up to 41 characters, I think we have right now.
Wow.
And yeah, we're just trying to merge kind of like that whole Pokemon collect them all with Suikoden recruiting and like the earthbound modern setting.
Wow, so you are a brand new dad and you are a video game developer. My goodness, you got a lot going on in your life.
Yeah, it's pretty busy right now.
So how did you come across the Press Row podcast?
Well, I've been kind of a big fan of sort of like the lineage of the show, I guess you'd say. So before this, Fourth String, and then before that was the Sports Anomaly.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I've been a long time sort of in the wings listener.
Nice. Well, that's awesome. Yeah, I was the same way. I was a huge fan of the Sports Anomaly and big fan of Fourth String, and eventually got to join that crew. So yeah, this is definitely the in that lineage, exactly as you say. So so you obviously must be a big sports gamer. What is your what's your go-to sports gamer? You know, what's your favorite?
Well, it's not going to be that much of a stretch, but I'm Canadian, so it's NHL.
There you go.
Obviously. I love that game. I play the GM Connected all the time. And also the EA SHL, I think it's called.
Sure, yeah, absolutely.
That's my go-to sports game.
Nice.
Basically.
So we talk a little bit about it on the show tonight. Are you... You know, what are you anticipating? What are you hoping for? What are you expecting from the not yet announced, but everybody seems to think is coming out, NHL 15 on the next-gen consoles?
I really hope they improve the anticipation and sort of situational awareness of the AI right now for the team and for your own players. There's been a lot of frustrating moments where guys make stupid line changes or just make bad decisions overall, don't make moves to the net, that sort of thing. So I'm hoping they take the time and really improve that. I think with 14, they really improved on the skating engine. It didn't feel like your feet were in cement anymore, like in 13. So I'm really hoping that they maybe take it a step further, but also improve the AI.
So I gotta ask, who's your favorite hockey team? Are you a Leafs fan, or are you you sort of get out of the greater Toronto area with your hockey support?
I actually was a Habs fan, but I have since been indoctrinated into Leafs Nation.
There you go.
can't get away from it. It's everywhere in Toronto. So,
what other sports games are you into?
I used to be really big into Madden, and the blocking just became too frustrating for me. I kind of left a few years ago. I really like FIFA, but haven't picked that game up in a few years. And I actually, every March, I fire up my copy of College Hoops 2K8. So
there you go. Nice.
That's my go-to March game.
Nice. What is your current gaming setup? Are you, do you have the next-gen stuff? Are you, you are a PS3, 360 guy? Like, what's your current rig look like?
I have every previous gen, so Wii, PS3, Xbox 360. I have no next-gen currently.
Interesting.
PS4, I will be getting eventually, but like I said before, there's not much time for gaming, so there's no point really putting any money out right now. Although I did just have to buy a new computer for work, so hopefully I can do some PC gaming on that sometime in the future.
So I got to ask you, your Twitter handle is MyAngryCommute. Where did that come from?
Well, when I moved up to this Toronto area, I used to commute into Toronto. I used to work at a... Actually, I know you're big into Guacamelee on the Vita.
Oh, yeah. I love those. Love Drinkbox Studios and everything they made.
Yeah, I came from Drinkbox, actually.
What? Are you serious?
No, I used to work there. I worked there for about a year and a half, right before this.
Well, that is... They are, without a doubt, my favorite indie studio. I love Mutant Blobs Attack. I love Guacamelee. I mean, those are two of my favorite games of the last four or five years easily.
Yeah, they're all great guys. They're really good at what they do, and I was actually sad to leave, but we made the decision so I could take care of my son, kind of thing. So
smart. I mean, not smart to leave, but smart to take care of your family. As a guy who has I work like a crazy person so that my wife can stay home with our son, and you won't regret that decision. I can guarantee you that.
But basically, that's where the Twitter handle came from originally. I was commuting in Toronto and just getting so angry with people on the roads, walking. So I decided to create that and vent my frustration, which is now pretty ironic since I don't commute anywhere. I don't really have anything to be angry about right now regarding commuting. So it's kind of a lost cause at this point. Maybe I'll pick it up again later.
Well, as somebody who today spent over 3.5 hours on the Pennsylvania Turnpike, maybe you can just hand it to me, and I'll take over that.
Feel free. I'll retweet anything angry you want to say.
Well, hey, man, congratulations on winning the Press Row Podcast March Madness Tournament, but congratulations much more on being a dad. It's one of the greatest things ever. Congratulations on your gig, on your game coming out, on being a part of some of my favorite games from Drinkbox Studios. I have a feeling that we're going to get you on at the end of the year on our special end of the year episode where we go around and talk to all of our friends about their sports games of the year. I know you don't have a whole lot of time for gaming, but are you up for coming on the show at the end of the year and sort of giving us your rundown of your favorite games of 2014?
Sure, yeah, of course. Hopefully I'll have some time to actually play games after July-ish or September, whenever the game is done and out, and fit it in.
Awesome. Well, Andrew Hoculik, Twitter handle, MyAngryCommute. Congratulations once again. Thanks for coming on the show, and good luck with everything.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having me.
All right, up next, great story by Owen Good this week, who touched on something that we have touched on many times since the beginning of the Press Row Podcast, but have not really spent a segment on. And it was something that was brought up at our PAX East panel, which, by the way, was a wonderful time. Thank you, Kat and Sumit and Owen and TJ for being there. And, well, Chris Sanner, thanks for not showing up. You know, I mean, come on. Really? You couldn't just pay the $1,000 to get there and back in the hotel and all that just to be on the panel? Really? You
gotta be a team player.
Come on, man.
Guys, I actually have a story about that.
Oh, let's hear it.
I started my pilgrimage a full week before PAX. I started westward, and before I realized that was going to take a lot longer than if I just turned around and went east. And then, a few plagues later, locusts, you know, Red Sea parting, things like that. I just ended up back in Oklahoma City. I don't know how this happened. I'm sorry. It was really weird. There's going to be a movie made about it, though, I'm pretty sure. Hollywood has contacted me, so something positive has come out of my absence.
I'm glad about that. But, I mean, we had a great crowd. We had a wonderful turnout. And I've had more people reach out to me after the show telling us how much they enjoyed it. So thank you, guys. But one of the guests one of the audience members asked about arcade sports games, and we talked about it a little bit. But, oh, and you had a great piece this past weekend where you actually – you did some good research. You had some very specific examples and some great points as to what has happened to sports games. So I want to talk about this, but first I'm explain to us really the crux of the piece and why you think that the arcade sports title has really, if it's not dead, it sure is missing in action these days.
I think it's a couple of things. Obviously, it's easy to blame development costs, but that's sort of a facile thing to say. I don't know what development costs are like. I'm not a video games developer, but I think I can speak as a consumer and say that my expectations of sports video games today, whether they offer an arcade style of play or a sim style of play, they're much higher. So the kinds of things that we saw in the golden age, which would be 10 years ago, 12 years ago, they could be accomplished a lot easier, and their deficiencies were a lot more forgivable because, frankly, there wasn't anything that was better out there, and B, people didn't know what it was. So that's one aspect of it. But I think really the other thing too is these, with the exception of Midway, which is dead, okay, and they did, when they did sports titles, they did like basically nothing but arcade sports titles. But they're irrelevant because they're bankrupt and gone. Arcade titles were basically extensions of, okay, so we paid for the group license with the league and with its players union, and that covers all games. And then, from there, it's royalties that we pay for the sales of anything else that we, create. So how can we create some extra money here? And so, you'd come up with these things, NBA Street or NBA Ballers or FIFA Street or whatever. And now developers have realized that they can make more money off of one license and have, one sale or one royalty arrangement and extend the revenue that they get from their players through things like Ultimate Team modes, through downloadable content, through stuff that is offered into the main game. And I think that's really what's been the kind of thing that's killed off the robust population of arcade sports or spinoff titles. And the other thing too is, when you look at the things that they offer, a lot of it is subsumed into the simulation title. When you look at, you got a home run derby in MLB The Show, you've got the All-Star Game festivities with the dunk contest and the three-point shooting. Not that those things would have been a video game unto themselves, but when you look at My Player and its career mode and the narrative that it's got set pieces in it this year in My Career, how much of that looks like NBA Ballers, which is what I mentioned in the story, and it's rags to riches mode. So I think the developers have figured out a way to scale their costs of building a new game they just don't build a new game, and they take the things that would have been a new game in past years where titles were put on a disc, stamped, shipped, nothing was updated, you bought it, you got it, that was the end of it. And now where things are more fluid and more malleable at post-release, they can do this a lot more cheaply by just, offering it as experiences, modes within the game, especially single player career, and then make extra money off of Ultimate Team modes or downloadable content.
One of the things that I came away from the piece, which I never really processed, was that the games that we play these days, your NHL, your Madden, your MLB The Show, your NBA 2K14, are so massive, and they incorporate 4, 5, 6 almost unique games in and of themselves, there is almost no way for a quote-unquote arcade game to compete with that. Because if you think back to the NBA Street games, which I used to love and play a ton of, or you know, the MLB the MLB Hits, or sorry, the NHL Hits, or the, you know, the MLB Slugfest, or the NFL Blitz, they were very narrow. There wasn't a lot of different modes to play, and even the modes that you had were extremely limited. It is almost impossible, unless you make it a downloadable $5 or $10 game, for anything like that to compete with, like as you said, Owen, the big time games that have these multiple massive modes, and you have the Ultimate Team. Like, to me, it's not so much where have the arcade games gone. They're still there. They're just part of the overall experience. And the only thing that's missing is, you know, you don't fly through the air for 10 feet and press 4 buttons and have a, you know, quadruple dunk. It's really just a missing game mechanic. But the overall sort of high-level fantasy is there between the career modes and the ultimate modes and all of those kinds of things. So let's go around the table. Let's start with you, Chris Sander. Your thoughts on this?
You know, you really hit on what I have thought for a while about this, Rich. And the big problem is, if there is a game that is quote-unquote an arcade game, whatever that really means, they oftentimes are just so darn narrow and so slim and so featureless that, I mean, what are you supposed to do with that? I mean, RBI Baseball, great example. There's no stat tracking for seasons. What is that? Why is that even how is that even possible for a baseball game?
Right, for not a baseball game, exactly.
To not have stat tracking. So, you know, I think developers, I mean, they're obviously, the suits are looking at this. They see the numbers in front of them. But to me, it seems like if you're going to offer an arcade experience, you can offer an arcade experience that has a lot of the trappings of the sport itself, such as stat tracking, such as full season modes, you know, just stuff like that. I just do not understand how, I guess personally, how that is not, that would not be more appealing than 3-on-3 NHL Arcade, which was a complete, I mean, it was a fun little game, but if I had to spend money on it, I would have been pretty ticked off about the fact that I spent money on that game. Mm. And I, you know, because these arcade games, they're being touted as arcade and fun. Well, it's not fun to play exhibition games over and over again. Give people reasons to play these games, and I think this, if you do that, the gameplay itself, I mean, there's a spot for it, even if it's very, you know, even if it's as simple as just making the game more accessible and faster paced, such as a Madden, just make Madden more accessible, faster paced, but offer every, you know, all the regular stuff that you could possibly offer, including an Ultimate Team kind of mode. I think that would actually have some kind of value there. But if you're going to offer an arcade game, which has, you know, exhibition mode and a season mode and, you know, some kind of crazy one-off mode, I just don't think there's much appeal there for people.
So, Mitsarkar, your thoughts?
Yeah, I certainly agree with everything that's been said here. I would say, for one thing, the problem with these arcade games nowadays is that, you know, when I write about these kinds of games, or you know, when Owen writes about does a long column on, you know, these games are missing, you know, a lot of the comments I see are like, man, if they just did, you know, NFL Blitz or NHL Hits or MLB Slugfest, I used to love those games, if they just did one of those, like, I totally buy that. And the thing is, like, you wouldn't. I think a lot of people,
yes, you're right,
have this perception of those old games as being awesome when, you know, they were kids or whatever. And yeah, like, I had a lot of fun playing NFL Street with like 3 other buddies, you know, after school. But the thing is that I think with the aging of the sort of market that played those games back in the day, you really lost the local co-op play that I think made those games so special. And you've had a lot of developers in recent years say, oh, you know, we don't have online because we're trying to bring back the couch co-op experience. Well, you know, that's what they said for NHL 94 anniversary mode. That's what they said for RBI Baseball 14. And like that viewpoint doesn't work because guess what? Like, I don't have friends over at my house these days. And those games, without the depth that we've come to expect from the simulation titles, they just don't hold your attention as a single player, you know, alone in your living room. And the other thing is from the economic side, it really is, I think, prohibitively expensive for publishers to invest in the games if they were going to create these expansive modes for something that's an arcade experience, something like an NFL Blitz, you know, which EA tried. I mean, there was a lot of content in that, 2012 NFL Blitz release, whether you like the game or not.
It was probably my favorite implementation of Ultimate Team mode in NFL Blitz.
Yeah, they had some really cool stuff. There was a lot of great, there was like online co-op mode, like a, you know, online seasons type thing with like divisions and rankings, if I remember correctly.
Yep.
But the thing is, the arcade games are not something these days that the publishers can charge full price for because, you know, our value systems have changed because of digital games. So, you know, if you have an arcade experience that is by nature a thin product in terms of modes and whatnot, people are going to say, "Oh, I'm not going to pay $60 for this." Well, if EA has to go and sell a game like even NFL Blitz, which again had a lot of stuff in it, for $15, that's not worth it to them as a publisher to invest in that mode with either a new development team or a development team that's dedicated just to that game, or, you know, then they're taking away people from the marquee product, the simulation game, to make that. The investment doesn't seem to make sense economically in terms of the return from the audience. I remember talking to Andrew Wilson at E3 last year. This was when he was the head of EA Sports before he was the CEO of EA. And, you know, I was asking him about arcade sports games, and he was like, "Look, we tried. They didn't sell." Speaking of games like 3-on-3 NHL Arcade, which, by the way, Chris, I loved, and NFL Blitz. You know, he's like, there really wasn't much uptake on that kind of stuff. And so on the digital side, again, as Owen was saying, they've sort of focused on the add-on revenue streams for things like Ultimate Team.
Cat Bailey, your thoughts?
I think that there's not nearly enough out-of-the-box thinking when it comes to arcade games. I think that one of the problems that I have personally had with arcade sports games is that, well, frankly, they look boring. Tecmo Bowl is an example, the Tecmo Bowl remake, NFL Blitz, the remake, NBA Jam, the remake. They tend to skimp on art
blasphemy.
Style.
Blasphemy!
And,
oh my God, I'm dying
sorry.
Over here.
Okay, whatever, but I think that they could definitely, they're arcade games. They don't have to look like Sims. They don't have to look true to life. They can have more fun with the look. And I don't think enough of them do that. And we complain a lot about, well, why isn't there a narrative structure in these sports games? Why isn't there that sort of thing? Like, especially narrative structure. And then you think, well, this is the perfect opportunity with these arcade games is to implement that sort of thing and take those kinds of risks and just kind of go bonkers and have fun and go crazy. But we don't really do that. We see arcade sports games either defaulting to the same old stuff that we were playing 20 years ago, which is fine, but that was a long time ago. And I think that we could try something new with arcade sports games, or they're, you know, mobile games.
Submit a rebuttal.
Yeah, you know, I would say, though, that in terms of thinking outside the box, and this isn't, you know, to defend publishers per se, but a major factor in I think why we haven't seen more experimentation, but also in sort of a major factor in the decline of arcade sports games as a genre, is that I think over time, you know, especially the past decade, when you're talking about licensed sports games, which most of these arcade games are, at least the popular ones, it seems like the licensors have become a lot less willing to allow for that experimentation with the license in terms of, you know, something like NFL Blitz. From what we heard, the 2012 version, they were much more restricted, EA was, than Midway was back in the day. And a lot of that is due to, of course, the NFL's changing attitudes on the depiction of the violence of the sport of football. And so I think that's another reason that you've sort of started to see the decline of arcade sports games in general, is that if it's going to be a licensed product, the licensors are going to put restrictions on the kind of stuff you can do. If you're talking about something like a story mode, I mean, yeah, if it's a game like Midway's Blitz the League, then yeah, you can do a storyline about steroids and have x-ray vision for your scrotum breaking when someone hits you in the nuts. But that's not something you could ever do with an NFL game.
You're right, but do these games necessarily need to be licensed? Or, because I would say yes, they would with a sim, but I wouldn't say that's the case with an arcade game.
I think people have, the sports video game genre has very clearly communicated that people expect licensed video games. I mean, the number of successful titles that are not mobile, that are unlicensed, I mean, I'm trying to remember the last one, to be honest. This is, you know, on consoles, which is where the bread and butter is. I mean, on PC, it's a different story because you're talking about, you know, management simulations with Football Manager and Sega's Baseball Manager. But it you know, on consoles where you know, these games sell, they want representations of a league. And people talk about, oh, the gameplay is a thing. I want to see good gameplay. I want to, you know, what did Backbreaker sell? Okay. And they put they really worked their ass off for that game, and it wasn't great at launch. But they worked their ass off with the Great House patch that arrived. It was like 3 or 4 months later, and that's still. And I don't even know that I'd call it a cult hit. So,
but Backbreaker was positioning itself as a sim game, right? I mean, yeah. Tecmo Bowl wasn't licensed, and from what I've been able to see, it did fine. I mean, it wasn't a breakout hit, but that's because wasn't a very good game.
Tecmo Bowl Throwback was a disappointment because once you strip away the licensing and the familiarity with the teams and the players who were on those teams and knowing the way they behaved and associating their unique traits with that name that you knew, once you stripped all of that away, you were left with gameplay that was Byzantine. And it was very faithful to its gameplay from 25 years ago. And then you realize just how dated that actually is. I think Tecmo Bowl Throwback is a great case for why these games are necessarily, you know, licensed. Because when you take it away, there's almost no incentive to play it.
TJ Lowerman, are you at this point in time, would you find yourself more interested in a brand new arcade game or a brand new fun way to play Ultimate Team?
Ooh, I can't have both? Because it's actually kind of true, because during this discussion, the thing I've been thinking of is, what game can I not get into because it's gone too sim? And I'm thinking that's basketball. For me, NBA Live and 2K14, I just can't get into because it's too far to the sim side.
Between Cat killing NBA Jam and you killing NBA 2K14, I can't take it.
Whoa. NBA Jam is one of the greatest games of all time.
I wasn't killing NBA Jam. I'm saying that these arcade sports games are frankly boring to look at.
No, I know. I'm just having fun.
Yeah, but like I can't get into those games. Even if I turn them on like rookie setting, it's just not interesting. And I feel if there was a cool new NBA Street game, I would be really excited for that. And I would definitely go out and pick that up, even if it I'm not going to say even if it didn't have the licenses, but I would want it to have the licenses, but also those fun guys that we remember from back in the day. But something Smith said earlier really like hit close to home. I was thinking about when we played arcade games, the main reason arcade games were cool was because we were in our arcade around other people and experiencing them. And you do something cool, you high five the guy if he's your teammate, or you boom shakalaka in someone's face next to you. And when I played NBA Jam on Fire Edition, I played a ton of it online. And it was always like, yeah, that was great. I made a cool dunk, but there's no one next to me that I can like high five and get really excited about. And that works with sim games because you're trying to be serious and you're trying to win these games. But arcade games are all about having fun. And I think you just end up feeling really awkward about yourself if you're jumping up and down because you just did that triple flip dunk and made the backboard break. But I don't know. That's just me.
You know, the things that I think about when is that there is absolutely a group of and it's a significantly sized group of people who have wonderful fond memories of their time playing these arcade games of the late 90s and the early 2000s. And there are some of these games that were really well well designed and fully featured, like The Bigs. I mean, we've talked about The Bigs before. That's probably for my money the best arcade sports game as far as bringing me back in, not just playing against my buddy in a one-off, but you know, having a good season mode and something that keeps me going, not only single player but multiplayer. But I mean, and Sumit, you touched on this, the bottom line is these days people don't buy these games, right? Like, you know, the NHL 94 mode that was out, when you know we were talking with the development team, they're like, yeah, if there's demand, if people like this, we'll definitely bring it online. There clearly wasn't, otherwise they would have. You know, the last NFL Blitz that came out, I thought was a perfectly fun game, had a lot of good stuff, and nobody bought it. And I mean, not nobody, but certainly didn't buy it. There wasn't enough sales to keep it going. So I mean, the bottom line is, you can talk about the suits and the marketers and the but the bottom line is the consumers aren't buying these games, and it doesn't matter if it doesn't matter if people don't spend the money on the games. And I'm not admonishing consumers for not doing it because you vote with your wallet, right? I think the bottom line is sort of coming back to the original point that Owen made is, the games that we are getting have so much stuff in them for so many different types of people that they've basically crowded them out of the market. The only problem is I've got a young son and there's no way that he can pick up and play any of the sports games that I love. And I think the one thing that we are losing here is that entry level game is really missing, and there is a longer term issue that I think we will face because of that. And not only just that those games aren't there, but from a higher level, from a, you know, level of sports in general, if you don't have a way to introduce kids to Major League Baseball or hockey or NFL football at a level that they can participate in when they're 6, 7, 8, 9 years old, you know, you're really missing a big opportunity. But that, you know, that's really where it comes in for me. TJ Lowerman, take us out on this topic.
The one thing I wanted to say was, I think the main problem with the games that have been coming out that have been arcade games is, while they're really shallow, they try to sell themselves essentially on the name alone, which is why you have RBI Baseball, Tecmo Bowl. What was the other one? Can't even remember. But it's like they want to sell you this real skimpy game and just sell you on the name. Oh, you remember RBI Baseball was really good 25 years ago, but we made a baseball game that still kind of sucks, but we have the RBI Baseball name, so you should be excited. But they need to do more stuff like The Bigs, where they take chances and put out a new, better game that nobody's played before and not just try to live off memories that people had back in the day.
Yeah, good point. And Chris Sander, you will take us out on this topic.
What you said earlier, Rich, about how the leagues need to have accessible ways for kids to enjoy the games, I think that also follows with adults. And I think, you know, if I set my brother down, who is literally only a few years older than me but does not play video games, and tried to explain to him how to play Madden, it would take, you know, a couple of hours to get everything, you know, to get him to figure out, oh, this is how I do it. Easily. There needs to be a game or an option within those games where people like my brother, where people, we all know someone like that, who can literally sit down and have some success and feel like they're doing something cool on screen. And that's what arcade games really did for these leagues. And I if they want to do this within the sim games, that's fine. But there needs to be an option for people like that.
Oh, good. You'll actually take us out on this topic.
Actually, it's, you know, you're right that arcade games represent some kind of an entry level or introductory product. But over Christmas, I remember I went up to my parents' house for Christmas Day, and Dad said, "Why don't you bring up one of your video games and show me how to play it?" I brought up my Xbox 360 because it had the most downloaded video games on it. And I didn't want to bring up a bunch of discs, and we tried to play NFL Blitz, and it just wasn't working. And we tried to play NBA Jam, and that was beyond him too. And Dad is a 65-year-old man, but I think he's a pretty sharp guy. The thing that he did play and could understand and was working for him was, he played par 3 golf at Augusta National and Tiger Woods PGA Tour 13.
Yeah.
So let's not overrate these arcade games for being, simplified, boiled down experiences. In many cases, they are not.
Good point. Good stuff. All right. We have got a bunch of great listener questions. Another reason I love this show and the community. So we're gonna hit up a few of these, and we're gonna start with some Madden-based questions. I got a few of these actually. I'm gonna go through them. Arcader Alb says he would love to hear our thoughts on the Madden teaser video, and Mr. NY718, who I believe is actually Submit Sarkar. Actually, no, he's Khalil Ward. Says please talk about that useless Madden teaser trailer. And then we also have another tweet from Senior NASCAR, David Burney, says, "Will we see that next-gen jump in graphics and gameplay for Madden 15 we've all been waiting for?" So let's jump into some little Madden news. Now, as most of you know, they did officially announce Madden 15. It comes out on August 26th. There was a teaser trailer. I'm not big on teaser trailers. To me, it doesn't make a big difference. Anybody have any significant thoughts on that? We'll start with you, Submit Sarkar.
No, not particularly. It was like, 30 seconds long, and a lot of that was logos and such. I don't know. Yeah, sure. Defense focus, that sounds really good. I think a lot of people thought that the running stuff was was weighed too heavily, especially on the old-gen versions last year. So that'll be cool. I think it's interesting that they're, highlighting this idea of his digital transformation. I say his because I don't know how to pronounce the dude's last name.
It's Keckley, Luke Keckley. I can say it. I just can't spell it.
I thought it was
Keckley.
Okay.
I'll take your word for it, both of you. Sure. Keckley, Keckley, Kutchley. Sorry, Defensive Player of the Year. You're awesome, but I can't pronounce your name. So... obviously that they are teasing some sort of visual bump, which I sure hope so. I mean, certainly the new gen versions were improved gameplay wise, but I think a lot of people really were kind of let down by the lack of a major difference in graphics. So we'll have to see.
Chris Sanner?
I actually have three very brief thoughts, almost as brief as the teaser trailer. One, if you are disappointed by the teaser trailer, seriously, what did you expect? This is Madden this year. These are all of our new features, and this is it. Marketing push over. I mean, seriously, come on, think about it. Think about it. Just a little bit. Two, the defensive focus is something this game has needed for a long time. Three, I expect the graphics will be a lot better because history tells us the second and third and fourth year of next-gen sports games tend to look a whole lot better than that first one. So you're going to see a lot of improvements in all the games, I think, this second time around. So I can't wait.
Oh, and good.
Again, it is a little silly to put so much into a teaser trailer. I'd like to point out a defensive focus in this year It's the 10th anniversary of Madden NFL 2005, which had Ray Lewis on the cover and introduced the hit stick, and was the, I guess, last defensive focus that they seriously put into this game. And it's probably standing as still the most acclaimed Madden, you know, on record. I know that Metacritic scores are a little bit of a different beast 10 years later than they were 10 years ago, but it seems like a nice little anniversary tie-in there. And I'm sure you'll hear them observe that heritage. As far as, you know, what Chris said, yeah, I do think that they're going to come in with something that looks different and plays different. They don't get a lot of time to work on new features, and when you're doing two different versions of a game, you get less time to do that. I will say this. This game has got to make an upgrade in its studio presentation, in its broadcast presentation, because that is, people have communicated that they consume this stuff, they expect to see a game as if it was played on television, not something that's played in real life. And the dialogue support that is coming from Jim Nance and Phil Simms is, you know, beyond stale, and they really have got to do something there. Otherwise, you know, all the pretty animations and sophisticated tackling and crap like that, it's great. But when you hear Phil Simms say the same thing six games in a row, it's going to feel like the same old game.
I completely agree with the second half of that, and I could care less about the first half of that. But let's go to you, Cat Bailey.
I am just surprised that they've waited this long to give us any information whatsoever. But then I thought about the fact that Madden 13 really didn't have its first info come out until like E3. So I suppose there's that. I get it. It seems like they're being a tiny bit cagey with what they're going to be doing this year.
Madden's publicity schedule has been, you know, the big grandiose voting contest for the cover. And then at the end of May, they go into their actual first details. So they've just foregone the voting contest, and they're still on schedule, in my view.
You know, one of the things, and again, I've spoken about this before, I'm not really big on the whole 4 months before a football game or any sports game comes out getting too excited about it. I mean, we're still having a blast playing in our Press Row League. You know, Madden, we're about to hit the playoffs of our fourth season. It's insane. I'm so excited, especially because I'm the number one seed in the NFC. But anyway, yeah. One of the things I did want to talk about is, once again, there's no PC version of Madden. And with EA owning Origin, which is their own digital distribution service, it's a, I don't know if it's a homeless man's Steam, but it's a poor man's Steam, but it's certainly a key cog of the Electronic Arts revenue stream. Is it a bad idea? I mean, is EA missing an opportunity to not be creating a Madden version on the PC? And TJ, I'm going to start with you. Do you think that they're missing an opportunity here?
As someone who still plays MVP 05 on the PC, I would say yes, but I would never buy it. I mean, I assume it would take a pretty good computer to make Madden look as good as a console version. So the people that would buy that are probably so niche that the sales would never justify it.
Chris Sanner, do you think there are enough people in the sports community that would justify the creation of a PC version of Madden?
You know, I really feel like I should just say NFL 2K5 because, I mean, geez. we're talking about a PC version of Madden that has to be in there somewhere, right? I mean, so that's it's so cliche. I mean, it felt like this was something that was asked yearly until a couple of years ago. Like it was like a big push, people in the community, like the same 10 people every year. But I think, I don't know. I mean, FIFA obviously does, but that's a different market. I mean, overseas, you're looking at more people with PCs than consoles. I don't know. I don't think Madden is really that kind of a game. I don't think it's the kind of game that really lends itself to being PC, a PC kind of market. But at the same time, you own the distribution network. developing for PCs and these current consoles isn't too different. It probably isn't that hard to make a port and probably make a little bit of money eventually off of it.
Oh, and good. Is EA missing an opportunity by not releasing a PC version of Madden?
No. It has set sales records year over year over year since it decided to abandon the PC market back in 2007. Has not hurt its position or performance ever since. I think that it's, you know, PC is something, you know, it's interesting. I would talk about, you know, the latest edition of a sports video game when I was at Kotaku, you know, back in 2010, 2011, and you'd see comments pop up, where's the PC version? Are they going to make a PC version? And you go, okay, all right, fine. And I don't even see those comments anymore because, you know, publishers have given up on PC in North America, and I think now PC gamers have given up on sports. I think it was always a niche market, and I don't think it was something that really justified the development cost or, you know, building it or, you know, God forbid. I mean, you know, they're very, very particular, the PC gamers. And if you're creating something that is ported from a console over to a PC, you know, you're just going to get your ass chewed out on NeoGAF as the day is long. And, you know, I don't know that as things contracted and publishers were looking to cut costs, especially around the console, the last console generation transition, it just became less and less worth it. So, no, they're not missing out on anything. They're making this, I mean, hell, you know, they send tens of millions of dollars to the NFLPA. They're making plenty of money off of Madden just putting it on consoles itself. There's nothing on PC that they're missing.
You know,
I'd like to chime in.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say that as a fan, I'm actually disappointed that they're not putting it on PC because I've seen FIFA on a $3,000 machine cranked up to max settings and FIFA 13, and it looks better than FIFA 14.
Who is really going to buy a $3,000?
No, I'm saying that this thing exists and it makes me happy, and it's disappointing to me that it doesn't exist. And also, I don't think that I agree with you to an extent, Owen, but I think that they're not doing themselves any favors by it being on Origin. Now, if it were on Steam, it might be a different story. But the fact that it's on Origin really limits its discoverability and unfortunately does limit it to a pretty niche audience.
Interesting.
I wish it did exist, though.
The other thing that I, you know, it doesn't really have, it generated a lot of conversation in the last couple of years, but no longer does, is the fact that it's not coming out on the Wii U, which is no surprise, and the fact that it's not coming out on the Vita. And of course, by having it on the PS4, if you have a Vita, you can remote play, which certainly lessens the sting a little bit. But it, you know, it is definitely interesting that that the major publishers have clearly found the platforms that they will put their games on and the ones that they will not. All right, got a few other excellent questions, and this is something I'm really interested to hear about this. This one comes from Man of Steel 3432, Dennis Butler. He says, what kind of gaming setup do each of you have to play the PS4 or Xbox One? For example, what size TV and what kind of surround? So we're going to go around the table. Sumit Sarkar, what's your gaming rig?
I have a 26-inch 1080p LCD TV, and I use a Astro A30 headset, so that it's like, you know, sort of virtualized like surround sound headphones or whatever. But yeah, I don't have like you know, speakers or anything.
TJ Lyerman, what's your gaming rig?
24-inch monitor, and I got those cool EA Sports Monster Beats so that I can hear the crowd going wild. Nothing fancy, but that, yeah, it's only 24 because I play in my office,
so. Which is about the size of a closet, I believe.
It's pretty sweet, though.
Yeah, it definitely is. I love those blackout curtains. Owen, good. What's your gaming rig?
I have a 47-inch Vizio. I don't know what the hell it is. TV. I bought it in 2008 from my former employer in Silicon Valley. I have, you know, a shitload of headphones, because when I was at Kotaku, I was the guy who reviewed headphones. I don't know how the hell you review headphones, but I did. but I rarely use them. I just, you know, use the speakers that come out, because I'm in a quiet neighborhood, and I play downstairs. So that's my setup. Oh, and all of my consoles are inside a cabinet that my grandfather built.
Oh, yeah.
To house his family's, my mother's, the first TV that their family ever had.
I love that. And you actually were working on it
yes.
one night during our famous Xbox One launch hangout, which is one of my all-time favorite shows.
Yes, you saw my ass crack.
That is also true. Kat Bailey, what's your gaming rig?
36-inch Sharp Aquos TV with just the output from the TV. It's a TV that I got in 2008 or 2009 when I moved to San Francisco, and I've been meaning to get a new TV, so if somebody wants to recommend me something, let me know.
Hmm. Interesting. Chris Tanner, what's
your throwing out the challenge to the listeners.
Nice. Chris Tanner, what's your gaming rig?
Well, Rich, being as that I own a movie theater, I will stroll down to the movie theater and plug in my Xbox and on the biggest screen with the best sound system. No, I can't lie like that. That's terrible. I have a 42-inch off-brand Sears TV I bought when HD first became cool. It is still kicking. I don't know how that's possible, Rich, by the way. This TV is, like, I bought it for $1,000 way back, you know, years ago, and it still works. And my audio is just out of speakers. And I could have, like, surround sound hooked up, but I'm way too lazy to actually do that since I moved in August. So I'm serious. I had it hooked up in my house back in Norman, but I just have not hooked it up in the new house yet. I don't know why this is. I'm just lazy.
Interesting. Yeah, I've got a Samsung 44-inch, I think. It's either 42 or 44. And, you know, I just have HDMI hookups from my PS4 and my Xbox One's right into it. No headphones, no surround sound. Just blast it in the office when the wife and the kids are asleep and hope they don't wake up. It works out well most of the time. All right, another great question. This one comes from Sean Camden, or Sean Camden Savis, not quite sure. But anyway, that is his Twitter handle. He says, hey, why no news on NHL 15 yet? Is next-gen version coming for sure? I'm starting to get nervous about NHL 15. Kat yes. Bailey, of course, the Minnesota Wild just scored a game-time goal.
Oh, my God.
Kat Bailey, should I be nervous about NHL 15 on next-gen, or is it coming?
No, it's definitely coming. It's the thing that's going to happen. It's just they're working feverishly on it, and I'm guessing that they're going to – you're going to get the first details whenever EA decides to have one of their annual sports showcases or when they show it at E3. But it's a thing that's happening. Don't worry about it.
Owen Good, any reason for concern about no NHL news, or are you with Kat Bailey on this one?
I have no concern. I'm confident that we will be hearing about it in Los Angeles. I'll put it that way.
The next one, this comes from the JBone29. He says, the lack of a tournament mode in next-gen FIFA is disappointing. I searched for 30 minutes before I found it. And then Man of Steel 3432 says, I can't find a used FIFA 14 for PS4 anywhere. Chris Tanner, you're a big FIFA guy. How do you play FIFA these days? Are you doing the single player mode? Are you doing are you managing a club? Like, what are you doing? And are you disappointed that you can't just go in and play basically the FIFA version of a season mode, which is the tournament?
I've played manager mode pretty much exclusively in FIFA. I don't know why, but I mean, you just get through games so quickly. I can just run through seasons, you know, just in a couple of weeks, really. And I that's how I play it. I play with my South End United. I have no idea why they are my allegiance, but they are. And that's how I do it. I'm disappointed in the lack of a tournament mode. I'm also, I really wish FIFA would really just expand on the international offerings and even offer you probably can't just say World Cup. I mean, that's obviously licensed, but you could have a World Championship mode or something where you could just play it. I'm not aware of that. Maybe I'm missing it, but but FIFA's menus are nowhere near as bad as NBA 2K's. I'm still discovering features in NBA 2K I never knew existed. So I just think, honestly, that I'm really disappointed we do not have a way to just set up a situation. What would be even really cool with FIFA would be to set up a custom league with teams from all over the world, just whoever you wanted to put in there. That would be a pretty cool mode to have, and you just don't have that.
Yeah, first of all, the fact that you're a Southampton supporter, now I hate you because they basically ruined Everton's chances for the Champions League, so you're now off the show and banned forever. Good day, sir.
I actually, Rich, you misheard me. I said Southend United.
Oh, okay.
That's a Football League 2 team. They're way down there. It's like single A in England or something like that.
You're back.
Oh, Rich, they were never going to the Champions League. Come
Stop
on.
It. They had a shot. They had a chance. Oh, so close. The tournament mode is something I really, really played a lot of the last couple of years, and it took me more than 30 minutes. J-Bone, nice job by him. It took me more than 30 minutes to figure out that was actually gone. And basically what the tournament mode is, it allows you to play a season without all of the incredibly complex transfers and manager stuff. You just basically like, look, I'm going to play the season for Everton. I'm going to play the season for Roma or whatever. It was awesome, and it's definitely not in FIFA 14. It's interesting about how Man of Steel can't find a used FIFA 14 anywhere. I'm really surprised by that. I mean, could it be that basically everybody who bought FIFA 14, TJ Lowerman, were just liked it so much they didn't ever bring it back?
Rich, it's the digital future. Mm. Who buys games on disc anymore?
Me.
Yeah, and that actually
in fact us... I refuse to buy sports games online because I trade in my sports games every year.
And that brings us to the next listener question, and this one comes from a longtime listener, Poetic Drink to You, who says, why are people willing to pay the same price for a digital copy of a game? There's no excuse for a company to charge the consumer the same price they would charge a customer who buys a physical copy. TJ, you are all digital. Cat Bailey, you are all physical. Fight. No,
I'm not all physical. It's just that I'm all physical when it comes to sports games because it seems ridiculous to buy it digital and know that I can never turn it in or when the year's over, because I can't think of any sports game where I haven't upgraded. Even NHL... I upgraded from, despite the fact that I like NHL 13 better than NHL 14.
Submit our car. Should digital games cost less than physical games?
Oh, I mean, they certainly should. They just never will. I mean, at least not until GameStop is eradicated by some natural disaster that hits every GameStop location everywhere. Around the world. No, I mean, but seriously, that's the issue, is that, publishers don't want to draw the ire of retailers by undercutting them. And, they've cultivated those relationships with places like GameStop for a long, long time, and especially with stuff like pre-order DLC exclusive to retailers for the past, over the course of the past console generation. So, I think for now it's going to be business as usual on that front.
Owen, good.
The answer is no, because they're paying the vigorish to two entities. One is the licensees, multiple, and the second is the platform holder. You're selling on PSN, you're selling on XBLA, you're paying to Microsoft or Sony. You're also paying to the NFLPA, you're paying to the NFL. And if you reduce the cost of this because you're not stamping discs, you're just, you're cutting... The others will take the same percentage of a diminishing pie of revenue. So, that for me is why licensed sports video games are offered at $59.99 in digital form. And it's not to justify them. Yes, you should not buy a full price digital version of a sports video game because of what Kat said, which is these things become currency that you can at least trade in for some kind of a negligible amount, on another video game. But it's also because you almost get nothing in return for it. Don't buy sports video games digitally. There's no reason to do that right now.
On that
so
note,
I should return so I should not buy the PS4 version of MLB The Show and pre-download it digitally.
That's what I'm saying.
On a disc, because you're gonna.
The reason I am willing to go digital is because I'm going to play these games for so long that by the time I would trade him in, it would be like 325. And I'm not going to take 325 for a game.
I want to be sure. What you're saying is it's the convenience of you don't have to go out, drive to the store, get the disc, do all that crap, and bring it home. I mean, that's what you're saying, right?
Well, that, but also when they're going to give me $3 or $4 at the end of the day for the game, I would rather just not give it back.
I've turned in a copy of Madden like the day before a new copy has come out, a new version's come out, and gotten $20 for it.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be smart about when you hand it in. I mean, TJ, I understand if it's a convenience thing, you know, then obviously, you know, download it to your heart's content. I would be more inclined to order it over Amazon and have the disc sent to me on the day of release. I don't think you are getting no value if you get a full sports licensed sports video game, downloaded, because that experience is going to last 1 year in a meaningful state, and then its online features are going to be done after two.
Yeah, I understand.
So, okay.
And on that note, this has been another awesome episode of the Press Row Podcast. I want to extend a sincere thank you to TJ Lowerman and Owen Good and Chris Sanner and Kat Bailey and Submit Sarkar. You guys are fantastic. Thank you for making the Press Row Podcast what it is. And thank you to the listeners for listening. Again, I'm regularly humbled and delighted by all of the contributions that all the listeners make to the show. Tonight's a great example. These great questions, great tweets, all this wonderful feedback. You guys are the best. Thank you. And, of course, thank you to Operation Sports, Chris Sanner, for making this show happen. It is much appreciated. Well done, Mr. Sanner. Thank you. And, hey, yeah, Chris Sanner, welcome back. It's been like 7 months since you've been on the show. It's good to have you back, my friend.
Rich, that's way too much. I mean, we just have like 6 hamsters running in the server room, I mean, all day. That's what keeps us up. All I do is come on here, crack a few jokes. I mean, I mean, come on. Let's be serious now.
But so look for this in the next couple of weeks. We will obviously have our big MLB The Show PS4 review roundtable with this fine panel in a couple of weeks. We're going to get the game. We're going to play it for a little while. We're not going to jump right in and talk about it a day or two later. We're going to sink our teeth into it. But as always, look forward to some really good stuff coming up on the show. We're going to have some really good interviews with some developers, some publishers, and some pundits and other folks as always. So, on behalf of Chris Sanner from Operation Sports, Kat Bailey from US Gamer and other publications, Owen Good from Polygon, Sumit Sarkar from Polygon, and TJ Lowerman from That Sports Gamer, I'm Rich Grisham. Thank you as always, and we'll see you again in 2 weeks. Thank you so much for listening to this episode of the Press Row Podcast brought to you by Operation Sports. I'm your host, Richard Grisham. Please subscribe to this show via iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Windows app, or just go to Operation Sports every day, and that's where you'll find this as well. Wherever you get it, please make sure that you rate and review it and comment on it, because that helps keep the show going. Also, please be sure to follow the show on Twitter at Press Row Podcast, as well as all of our panelists and supporters, including Operation Sports' Chris Sanner at Chris_SNR, Polygon's Owen Good at Owen Good, Polygon's Smit Sarkar at Smit Sarkar, Operation Sports Steve Noah at Steve_OS, Pasta Padre's Brian Weedy at Pasta Padre, US Gamer's Kat Bailey at The_CatBot, TJ Lowerman at That Sports Gamer, and me, your host, Rich Grisham at Rich Grisham, as well as, of course, Operation Sports at Operation Sports. Again, thank you so much to the great folks at Operation Sports for making the show happen, and especially thank you to our listeners. We really appreciate your support.